Hello all, welcome to another episode of Star Spangled Eurovision. I am here today with Alex, who's back. Hi Alex.
Thanks for the introduction.
Yeah. <I'm back>. Yay! So today we will be talking about the Eurovision voting system, something that's a little complicated, hard to break through, just for anyone who's not very into Eurovision, and for those who are very into Eurovision, it's constantly changing, and so we'll take a nice little dive into it and see what we can come up with. Before we do that, though, we're going to be introducing a new segment wherein we go over some news that has happened between episodes. And so in the last 2 weeks, we've had some fun stuff come up. Will Ferrell, who, as you may or may not know, has been spotted at Eurovision in Lisbon this year, trolling the press room and watching the show. It was announced on Deadline this week that he will be co-writing and starring in a new Netflix comedy called Eurovision.
I'm wondering if it's going to be kind of similar to like a Borat-y kind of... I can imagine it being like a mockumentary of sorts.
I kind of hope it is. Yeah. I feel like that would be hilarious. That or just something like kind of like Talladega Nights or any of those like where he tries to like become a superstar in some kind of competition, which I feel like is a genre of Will Ferrell movies.
What country do you think? I mean, let's assume because he can sing that he's gonna pretend to be a contestant. I feel like he would pick like not to be offensive, but like a fringe country that's not very well known here in the United States, just so he can get away with a lot more, which could end up like offending entire country or population of people.
I'm like kind of hoping that the movie is about him representing San Marino. That would be incredible.
Honestly, I'm not completely like I don't even know the word.
I feel like that would be fun.
Yeah, well, it's within the bounds of possibility. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Like, and I would be okay with that. Like, that would be pretty funny.
So I'm excited for this. Hopefully we get some more details soon because it's pretty light on details right now. But apparently his wife is Swedish and apparently they're both longtime fans of the contest. So,
oh, well, in that case, he could end up being Swedish.
Maybe. And doing some like really racist accent.
I mean, I don't necessarily know if like it would be racist, but yeah, like it's possible that he could. Oh my god, that would be so funny.
That would be pretty funny. It'll be like Welcome to Sweden, but like Eurovision version.
Yeah, if you guys haven't seen Welcome to Sweden, it's with Greg Poehler, who's Amy Poehler's brother, and he's basically an American like trying to survive in Sweden.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, highly recommend it. It's really good. But yeah, no, that would be amazing if Will Ferrell decided to pretend to be Swedish. He'd probably, like, make his hair go long wear, like, a funky ABBA outfit. And everyone would just be like, that's not how it is. Okay, maybe a little bit.
Oh my god, I would love that. Anyway, let's look out for that, and we'll bring you news as it comes in. In other news, the 2019 contest, which will take place in Israel, might now not be taking place in Jerusalem. The cities of Haifa, Tel Aviv, and Eilat have also put in bids to host the song contest next year, and the government has promised not to interfere in the tender process, even though sort of Netanyahu came out in favor of it being in Jerusalem, and Tel Aviv, I believe at some point, said they didn't want to host it, but now they're putting in a bid. So we'll see how that goes.
So how does the bidding process for that work?
I think it's kind of like the Olympics or the World Cup bids, where cities just offer... Or they put up a bid to host and come up with a plan, and the city with the most guest potential or capacity.
So with the most votes? I mean, the only reason why I ask is because FIFA is notoriously extremely corrupt. Right. And it's by official, so it's how much have you corrupted the official to win. So congratulations, America, Mexico, and Canada. You must have done some great shit to get the World Cup bid. But no, so like that's why I'm wondering... Is it a vote internally between Israeli officials and, like, their judges? Or is it a, listen, as long as you fulfill criteria A through Z, then we'll see who has the most capacity to host?
I think it's an internal process, if I'm not mistaken. I think the local broadcaster, the local EBU member station, is the one who eventually decides. I might be wrong. I haven't looked this up.
Okay.
But I believe that is the case.
So feel free to drop that piece of key information in the comments when you guys look it up and
tell us if we're wrong.
Yeah.
And finally, Malta will no longer be selecting their Eurovision acts to their traditional selection competition, which is called Malta Eurovision Song Contest. Instead, the island nation will now be represented by the winner of X Factor Malta, which premieres this year for the first time.
Okay. Yeah, and that's not unusual, because we know that, like, Australia, Jessica Malboy, she won X Factor, or was it Idol? I think it was X Factor in Australia, right?
Yeah. I think it's pretty common for countries to pick the winner of, like, a famous competition show to be the winner. Not all of them have, like, a specific Eurovision national selection.
They just tend to pick, like, the most famous contest that they have in that country that will kind of garner interest from the audience exactly. to watch Eurovision.
And, I mean, Netta this year won an Israeli competition, and not one that's specifically a Eurovision one. And so, yeah, there's high promise. And Malta, unfortunately, has been doing great in the last couple of years, but maybe this will turn us around.
Oh my god, they didn't... Okay, I know they didn't go far, but they should have. Girl, you're on track. I'm assuming Malta is a woman. It could be a man. But Malta, if you're a female, like, yes! Okay?
Taboo, you've been watching too much Queer Eye.
Keep going.
Anywho, let's move on to the topic at hand. So this week we'll be diving into the Eurovision voting system, which is, as I mentioned, fairly dense, hard to break through, not necessarily hard to understand, but it's kind of big and scary, and we're going to try to parse it for you guys.
And make it exciting! I heard there's going to be fireworks. Not that you can see that over a podcast, but yeah,
we'll try.
Might hear them.
We'll try our best. and so, the voting system keeps changing, so maybe... I guess we'll start by talking about what the current system is. At least it was in 2018. They very well might change it in 2019 again,
and
too.
Let's preface this by saying the reason why it continuously changes is because there are so many countries, and they want to make sure that the winner is seen as legitimately as possible. And in almost every contest, there seems to be, you know, noise about, oh, somehow it was like the process was corrupted, or certain countries have more favor than others, so they continuously try to modify it in order to make it more fair. Note countries that have elections that still have electoral systems. But like, it's important to know this, that they're not changing it every year because people are like totally satisfied with it. They're changing it because they're trying to create a more perfect union. Wink, wink, wink.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably, as the contest evolves, more countries join and new problems arise. Mm-hmm. They're being corrected as they come along, which yeah. is good. It means that they're keeping it in mind and that they're trying to make it as fair as possible every year. And so the current voting system is what's known as a 50-50 system. So 50% of the vote comes from a 5-person jury of music industry professionals that's selected by the country to rate the songs, and 50% of the vote comes from a public televote. And so both juries and the public award points to their top 10 countries on what I'm going to call the 12 point scale, which our viewers are probably familiar with, but it's 12 points go to the first place winner, 10 points to the second place winner, 8 points to the third place winner, and then 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, down to the 10th. And a country in this current system can receive up to 24 points from another country if both the public vote and the juries rank the same country in first place. And with 43 countries competing, the maximum score any country could get is 1,008 points.
So to go into, like, I guess one of the reasons or one of the controversies with this current scheme has to do a lot with the semifinal, and how in the semifinal there are how many countries in the semi?
Like 18 or 19, I guess.
Yeah, so there are 18 or 19 countries in the semifinal that perform and do their song. So it's the 18 or 19 countries that are in the semifinal that are allowed to vote in the semifinal. Mm-hmm. And you can vote for any country except your own.
Yeah.
So let's say that all the Scandinavian countries were in the same semifinal. they're most likely going to vote for each other in the semifinal in order to make sure that they advance.
Yeah.
Now, this is one controversy that they have with the current system and the way that it's set up. Meaning, the current system that we have, although believed to be the most fair currently, could change.
And that's sort of, that phenomenon is known as block voting, and I do want to talk about that later and dive into that, and we're going to talk about whether or not that actually has an effect on who ends up winning Eurovision. But before we do that, I just want to maybe go into the history of the voting system and how it's sort of changed over time. And so in 1956, when the contest first started, all countries used a jury system with a jury vote, and they had two-member juries who assigned 2 points to their favorite song, and then that was how it was calculated. But the next year, in 1957, they actually upped the number of members of the jury to 10 for each country, who would distribute 10 points to their favorite songs. And I guess they might have thought that it was not a diverse enough group of people at some point. So in the 70s, apparently, each country had another two-member jury. But one juror had to be under 25, and the other had to be over 25.
Oh, that's smart.
With a 10-year difference minimum between the two.
Wait, what? Like, there had to be a 10-year difference?
In age, yeah, between the two.
Okay.
And so I guess they were trying to make it as fair as possible. That system only lasted 2 years, because it's a little weird. But, and this is something I didn't know. I thought it was a televote system until, or the entire time, but apparently, televoting wasn't introduced until 1997 in the Dublin contest, where 5 countries actually introduced televoting while the rest were juries. But then in 1998, after I guess that was a test of the televoting system, juries were eliminated entirely unless a country couldn't implement a televoting system or there's a technical problem.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. And so juries were actually reintroduced in 2009. Which, when the voting changed to an entirely 50-50 system, the kind of one that we know today, except up until 2016, the two scores were combined into one deux-point scale score. But now they're sort of, the scores are separate. So instead of a country giving another country 12 points total, they can give them 24 points total.
See, I like this a little bit more because it's like more transparent.
Yeah, I agree. And it's really, now it's really interesting to see the difference between the jury vote and the public vote, and the new system gives the public vote a little more weight than I think it did before. Actually, I'm not sure if that's technically true.
No, I mean, I think it gives more weight because they consolidate it all, and they give that big pool in the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily know, I mean, granted, I always put more weight on the popular vote than I do on the jury vote, mm-hmm. so I always find it a little bit more exciting. But it's a little messed up when you have, like, a country, for example, like Austria, that was just so far ahead
mm-hmm.
in the jury vote, and you're like, oh, that should mean something. But literally, there are so many categories, like, even if someone had gotten third place and was in the popular vote, and then third place in the jury, like, there was still that opportunity to beat the first place because mm-hmm. it's such a large lump.
And that kind of happened, actually, in 2016 with Ukraine. I believe Ukraine actually came in second with both the popular and the jury vote, but I think the popular vote went to either Australia or Russia, and the jury vote went to either Australia or Russia, but they got first and third, respectively. Mm-hmm. Or they caught Australia came in second, and then Russia came in third, and Ukraine ended up winning just because it had a higher total combined,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was really interesting. So that's how that works. And I mean, some people might consider that unfair. I don't know if it might be considered undemocratic, but
it's interesting, right? Because then some songs where the popular vote really just had no interest, and remind me if I'm messing this up, but I don't remember Austria actually going that far in the popular vote in comparison. It wasn't one of the favorites.
No, they did okay. It was like middling.
Yeah. Clearly a jury favorite.
The biggest discrepancy.
But the fact that it was so high amongst the popular vote, like there was kind of a universal agreement.
You mean jury vote?
No, of the popular vote.
Oh, okay.
There kind of was a universal agreement in terms of how many points Netta and well, I forgot her name.
Eleni Ferreira.
Eleni Ferreira was getting. Mm-hmm. It was like, okay, well, what's the point of the jury vote if it doesn't seem to resemble...
The popular vote.
The popular vote. Like, you would think that they would be a little bit more in sync than they are.
Yeah, and I didn't do enough research on why they introduced or reintroduced the jury system after the televote, the purely televote system. But I imagine maybe the same country was winning too often, or maybe like only like the most popular artists might have been getting too many votes. I'm not sure, honestly. I will look this up, and if we find a good article, we'll post it in the description. But I think it's interesting that they felt the need to reintroduce the jury vote, even though there are significant discrepancies in the way they vote. I mean, Sweden is an excellent example from this past year, where they came in second with the jury vote, but second to last, I believe, in the popular vote.
Yeah, so if anything, the population bias is more evident in the jury vote than it is in the popular vote. So you might as well consider getting rid of... I mean, so I remember watching Eurovision when it was only the popular vote back when I was a kid. And there's something exciting about seeing how populations vote. Granted, you're going to have your diaspora that vote in certain areas. So like when you look at the UK vote, if you're purely looking at popular vote, you're going to see a lot of points going to Poland, regardless mm-hmm. of whether or not that song was a clear contestant, which that might be why the jury vote is so important. I mean, I haven't researched it either, so I can't give you like a, this is 100% how it is. But I could see that being an instance of it where the UK wants to be able to give more points to countries, you know, without having to think of the diaspora in their country, which is why the jury is there to tip the totem in a more fair, we're distributing our so-called points more fairly.
Yeah, I think it might be, and also might be a response to politics, you know, where like the popular mood might be with or with against a specific country, and the jury is there to sort of temper that. But...
If it were there to temper it, I mean, and I see where your point is, but Sweden is notoriously a country that just continues to win. Like, they tend to do very well.
Right.
And if this were the case, you would expect the jury to be, you know, like, bringing forth countries that haven't won before.
Well, I mean, in Sweden's case, like, because, I mean, Sweden is just known as, like, the world capital of, like, pop music and producers. And so like music industry professionals either often work in Sweden with Swedes, you know, in creating music. And a lot of it is just, they make the type of music that the music industry professionals are more responsive to, as opposed to something maybe a little more inventive or...
But in that case, the jury isn't there to make it more fair. The jury is there to elevate, you know.
Yeah. Something a little Sweden. More boring, necessarily,
But also, you know, the jury very much liked Austria. Like, Austria won just a couple of years ago.
Yeah, like, that's true.
If we're looking for some kind of fairness, like, I'm waving another hand at you, Malta, okay? You should have been given a fair shot. I'm sorry, I'm going to advocate for you. But other countries as well that just haven't gotten it before. And granted, Israel, like, you got a long time ago, so... Not saying that this wasn't fair, but you would expect at least the jury to take that into consideration when they give their votes. And they've had more than enough time because these songs have been out and they're professionals. They know they're going to be in the jury. I know there is some weight in the performance, but if you're thinking of leveling the playing field, I think you would have considered who else you could vote for instead of the traditional strong actors.
And there was actually an interesting rule that was implemented this year in order to maybe correct some of the discrepancies with the jury votes. And that was, so before, on a jury of five people, even if like four of the jurors ranked a song first and gave it 12 points, if one juror decided that they hated that country, hated that artist, hated that song, whatever, and ranked it last, that could tank the jury vote for that particular country. Either, you know, a lower point total that they assign, or maybe even, you know, cut it down to the level of no points at all. And so this year, they instituted a weighted system wherein higher scores would be given more weight and lower scores would be given less weight. I don't know the math behind it because I'm not a math person. But I believe that was implemented in order to keep maybe, you know, one juror from really screwing up the allocated points from a jury.
Okay. Well,
I don't know if that worked, honestly.
No, because Denmark got absolutely just like trash jury votes, but they did really well in the popular vote. So thank you, everyone who voted. And jury, you can go fuck yourself. Okay, are we allowed to cuss on this podcast?
Yes, we have been for 8 episodes. So
sorry, I forgot. Yeah, so jury, once again, go fuck yourself. Yeah.
Okay, so now let's talk about block voting, which is honestly one of the most controversial parts of Eurovision, regularly controversial parts of Eurovision. And if you talk to sort of casual Eurovision watchers, you know, like the most common response to, like, what do you think of Eurovision? They'll say, like, oh, it's all political. Oh, all these countries just vote for each other all the time. Nothing matters. Blah, blah, blah. And then the phenomenon of block voting, as we sort of talked about earlier, is a bunch of countries who have either political or cultural, geographic ties, all sort of voting for each other instead of maybe the best song. So there was an interesting paper that was released not too long ago, I believe it was in 2017, that found that block voting was actually getting worse over time, and that countries were more and more likely to start voting in blocks than they were to come up with a sort of more fair system. I guess the question is, I mean, it's true, like, that happens, right? Like, Nordics all vote for each other, post-Soviet countries tend to vote for each other. Mm-hmm. Some of the more egregious examples are Cyprus and Greece, which almost always give each other 10 or 12 points. Romania and Moldova almost always give each other 10 or 12 points. You have countries with sort of long-standing historical ties giving each other points, like the UK and Malta consistently give each other lots of points, stuff like that. So many say that that kind of voting prevents some countries that are not traditionally part of a bloc like that from getting points at all or having a chance at winning. So the big five countries consistently, you know, do badly. And is that because of block voting, because they don't really have friends? Or is that because they're just bad at Eurovision and there's no filtering through the semifinals? So what do you think, Alex?
I mean, I haven't gone too in-depth about it. I think a lot of it depends on the statistics of the singular country to see where most of their points go. I think that it probably matters in the semifinal because of the types of people who watch the semifinal are a lot more invested than on the actual, you know, people who watch it on the day. I think that's a lot more families in the different countries. So I'm not saying that it doesn't happen in the final. I'm saying I'm just not 100% sure. Yeah. Because if it were, like, really strict block voting, I would wonder why certain countries in modern time have been able to win and what block really, you know, they're represented in.
I mean, with the semifinals, I definitely see, because it's a random allocation, which in itself is kind of a, you know, equalizer, but at the same time, as you mentioned in the example before, if all the Nordic countries end up in one semifinal, then they're all going to make it because they all vote for each other, right? Mm-hmm. Or if there's a country that ends up in a semifinal without any friends in their block, then they might not make it, even though they might otherwise, right?
Yeah. I mean, part of it is also ties, right? Let's say you're Polish and you're living in the UK and Poland is in a group, then you know that there's a heavy block of you that live in that country, and of course you're going to want to vote Poland to make sure that it makes it out of the semifinal. Mm-hmm. I think the same goes for, like, the Nordic countries, where it's like, oh, okay, we have each other. Norway, Sweden. Well, actually, Norway and Sweden. Denmark doesn't always make it. I feel like it's not really a quid pro quo for the triage, but definitely for, like, and Norway and Sweden. So thanks.
Finland
for
and Iceland don't always make it either.
Yeah. So it isn't always that it sticks out, but especially with Diaspora, you're gonna see, depending on what group they're in the semifinal, that they're gonna stick out. So maybe the fact that it's random is not good if we know from the get-go. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to calculate, but
Yeah.
It would be interesting.
I don't know if it would be more fair if they try to strategically place people in the semifinal, and then, like, there would be accusations of politics in that, too.
Yeah, but, like, look at... I'm going to go back to it. I feel really bad that I keep bringing this up. I haven't listened to the song since Eurovision, so it's not like I'm obsessed with it. But I thought Taboo was a really good song. But it had no chance of making it out of that semifinal.
I mean, yeah, because it was a particularly strong semi, but that's because it was a random.
So
random
what battle. If we open the semis to countries that aren't in the semis? Do you think that that would make it more fair?
Do you mean the Big Five? What do you mean?
Oh, no. So in the semifinals, if you
open the voting... Oh, if any voting, country could vote in any semifinal?
Yes.
Oh, I'm not sure. I don't think so.
You don't think it would make it better?
I don't know. Because I feel like a lot of countries will vote maybe against countries that they think will challenge their own countries in the final. And then maybe, like, because one semifinal comes before another one, that'll... The unevenness of, like, knowing which countries made it through the first semifinal. I don't know.
Just to set this straight, like, you can't vote against... you can only vote for something. You can't vote against it. So me voting for the Czech Republic, hoping that they are going to advance over Georgia because they're a stronger contestant, you'd have to hope that a lot of people are doing that. Because you can't pull points. You can only hope that other people are thinking of your evil scheme the way you are and allocating votes elsewhere.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's a big plot.
I don't know if
that would...
Sounds
very, very, like, Russia 2018.
So conspiratorial.
So conspiratorial.
But yeah, I don't know if that would make a difference, but it's an interesting thought. And maybe something, if any Eurovision officials are actually listening to this podcast, to think about.
Yeah, I mean, because it's already random to begin with.
Right.
The types of things that you're concerned about are going to be the same regardless, so you might as well give people a chance. If you know that you have this diaspora issue and this bloc voting issue.
And there, I mean, honestly, I don't see a good way to help it if it actually, you know, has an effect in whoever the winner ends up being. And speaking of which, that's what I kind of want to talk about. You know, even though it definitely is a phenomenon and has an effect on maybe who does better or worse in the final or in the semis, how much of an effect do we think it has on who the winner is going to be?
This is the thing I've been tussling with. I don't know if it has an effect on the winner.
Exactly.
Does it have
That's what I was winner? Thinking too, because just like looking back at the winners of the last maybe like 20 years, you have countries like Portugal who are not really in a bloc and who have traditionally done very badly.
Spain, right?
I mean, yeah, like, Portugal and Spain might vote for each other. It might get,
but,
you know,
yeah,
Italy
or
something.
It's not a strong block. Yeah, you're right.
It's not a strong block, and Portugal has historically not done very well in the contest. And then 2017, they had an excellent song, and they won.
Mm-hmm.
Ukraine does get a lot of block voting benefits, so that might be why they've actually won twice in the last 20 years.
But I would say that 2017 was a particular case.
2016, when they won?
Yeah. Sorry, yes. 2016 was a particular case. Given the song, the political context, and just kind of the vibe of the world at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that one is almost in an orb, and you could almost say this about all the Eurovision songs, but it's really in a class of its own in terms of why it won.
Yeah.
2016 was a particularly, I think, dark period
for
world politics.
Yeah. You're not wrong on that.
And the song emphasized that to such a point that people gravitated towards it as a, oh my God, this is acknowledging something that we're all really feeling.
And so it definitely, like, even if it benefited from block voting, it probably still would have won regardless because it was just so relevant.
And they don't normally get that. I mean, they're not normally elevated as much.
Yeah.
Like, enough to be winners each time.
Exactly.
I mean, I thought, like, this year, or, yeah, right, yes, so 2018. This year was, this is such a good song. I love that song.
And it did really well in the popular vote,
the
but just, like, not well with Jerry's. I mean, Sweden's won a couple times, so that's because Sweden is a musical powerhouse, not necessarily because of block voting.
Yeah, and I also think that they have a style. I mean, I don't think Denmark has it, but I think that Sweden introduces music to Eurovision that is something that you could listen to on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of countries kind of stick to a, what can we bring to Eurovision that is Eurovision-y?
Yep.
And Sweden is one of the only countries that's like, okay, you know, what is a hot song that we would have released anyways, but we might as well just bring it to Eurovision and see how it does.
Exactly. I mean, Azerbaijan won once. Germany, who is not in any particular block also, I mean, except maybe like Switzerland and Austria, but they won once. And they're the only big five country to have won in like 20 years. Actually, literally 20 years.
And that, I mean, that's a massive achievement. Because yeah. They just do not get as much coverage as the others.
No, not at
all. Through the contest. So, kudos to you, Germany.
And, I mean, Russia, despite the fact that they're consistently in the top 5 or 10, only won once. And this past year didn't even make it out of the semis, even though they're typically a very strong Eurovision country.
Yeah, that was a particularly horrendous song.
Exactly.
Okay, that, I'm sorry, I mean, I don't want to say it.
It's true. Yeah. One, is true, and two, I feel like that, you know, underscores the point where, yeah, I mean, obviously, block voting has some effect, maybe, but on, like, the overall results, but not necessarily in who ends up winning, and then, even if it does have an effect on some of the results, does it, you know, people are still, I think, voting for the song that they like best. And the block voting, you know, that kind of happens in block voting just because of cultural ties, because, for example, like, I mean, Belarus is a bad example because they didn't make it out of the final this year, out of the semifinal this year, but, you know, Alexeyev or Melvin from Ukraine, like, they're pretty well known in the Russian-speaking world, so, like, it's very possible that, you know, they got a lot of votes from, you know, Russia and surrounding countries because that's where they're known, they're already fairly popular there.
And this point, to some extent, has been made, but I see Italy, I see France, I see Portugal. Damn it. Throwing off my game. But I see them singing in their own language when really... And it's beautiful, and I love it, but there are not a lot of people who can connect to that in the block.
That's true.
I'm surprised that Eastern European countries that have more linguistic commonalities, that they wouldn't use that as a draw to pull votes from that region.
I mean, they generally sing in English, too.
That's just something I'm thinking of now that we're... Yeah, no, generally singing in English, but, like, if the Russians were to sing in Russian, there's quite a few Eastern, you know, countries that would actually understand what they're singing about.
Exactly.
And would probably... I mean, there's kind of this emotional connection. Like, I always wonder why, like... And the Nordics always sing in English, but... If they were to sing in their own language as well, I think that they would get a lot more points from their Nordic brethren because it would be like, oh, this is a thing for us, but it still sounds so nice. And the French are like, this is a gift from us to you that you can't understand. But it's about refugees. Figure it out. It's very deep.
Yeah. And I do want to talk about languages in another episode. I think that can be something we devote a whole episode to, which I think is really interesting. Yeah, so I guess, can we say that at least we don't think that block voting has an effect on the winner?
I agree. No, I mean, I think it's pretty clear from the history of who has been winning that it hasn't had a major effect. I think what would be more interesting, I guess, because right now we're looking at the accumulation of jury and popular, if we just looked at popular, to see whether the popular voting, because I think that's really the question we're getting at.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it would pretty much maintain the same structure that it has right now, which would kind of prove the point that black voting doesn't have an effect on the final.
Cool. Well, that's settled, I guess.
Boom! Solved Eurovision. You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
And anyone who's complaining about it's all political, shut the fuck up. Doesn't matter. Nothing matters.
Well, I mean, like, yes. I think we can agree that Ukraine was 100% political, okay. but also extremely beautiful. I don't think Israel was political, though. And I know that that will be the only time you've ever heard me say and will ever say that sentence. But in this particular instance, Eurovision 2018, Israel winning, definitely not political. Go Netta.
Great. Well, thank you all for listening to yet another episode of Star Spangled Eurovision. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/StarSpangledEurovision, at Twitter at SSE_pod, Instagram at Star Spangled Eurovision. Listen to us on SoundCloud, on Stitcher. Still can't figure out this Apple Podcast thing, but.
You know, yeah, and we'll I got an email saying that they were updating their privacy policy, and I was like, you won't even let us be on your thing, so why does that matter?
If anyone has any advice on how to get on there,
let us know.
Let us know. We have an email that you can send emails to, starspangledearvision@gmail.com. Let us know.
And if you want to find us in person, we live in Washington, D.C. But I'm not going to tell them anything else. I'm going to let you scope us out somehow, creepers.
I might cut that. Maybe not. We'll see. Leave it in.
Yeah, leave it in.
Okay. Night, y'all.